Hello, this is Aaron. Thanks for joining me for my podcast. This will be the podcast for June 21st called Growing Up X. I actually did this one last night, but I was outside and a storm kind of came up and went past, and it kicked up enough wind for a few minutes that it caused a lot of noise in the phone, so I decided I better redo it. Couldn't really hear it very well for several minutes in the middle of it. I was out there last night watching them cut the wheat, which is where I got the picture that'll be on this video. If you watch the video version of this, they started cutting last night, and it looks like they're just about finished now. And they're cutting it off short. It doesn't look like they're going to be baling straw. I was hoping they'd bale straw so I could ask if I could buy a few for the garden, but I'll have to get those somewhere else. I haven't done one of these in about a week, or maybe a little more even. The garden, once I got some rain, the garden kind of started winning the race against me on weeds, and so I've had to spend most of the evenings out there catching up on it, trying to stay caught up on it. So, didn't get as much of a chance to do these as I was hoping, but doing one here tonight. I'm doing this one inside, so I don't have to worry about the wind. I've been wanting to get some practice with this OBS studio program that you can do video screencasts and that kind of thing with it. It's a little more complicated than just talking into a phone, but it'll allow me to do some of the things I'm trying to work up to here with tutorials and that sort of thing, and possibly some live streaming of classroom time and things like that. So I need to get figured out how to use it anyway and how to work this microphone and things like that. The topic for this one, Growing Up X, the X there stands for Generation X. Well, I have a phone call. Oh, no, I don't. Okay, the X there stands for Generation X. A topic came up on a blog I frequent lately, or comes up now and then, because a lot of us on the blog are Generation X. And for the purpose of this, we're defining that as people born between 1961 and 1979, which puts me pretty much in the middle. Different people put the range in different places. I've seen it at like 64 to 82, that kind of thing. I didn't decide on the range for this, but it doesn't really matter. You always get, when you define group, you know, large general groups like that, you always get overlap and blurring at the edges anyway. But that doesn't mean you can't kind of find some consistent patterns within the group. So we were talking about Generation X and growing up in that generation. And the theory kind of developed that Generation X kind of was kind of a transitional generation, or has been kind of a transitional generation, that we witnessed America going from kind of the not quite the 50s and 60s America. We weren't alive for that, but that we saw kind of the leftovers of that. And then we witnessed as kind of the 60s radicalism, the 60s liberalism took over and gradually infected things. And all the changes that brought, we got to live through, or had to live through, a lot of those. And a lot of the things that we remember when we tell millennials or younger people about them, they almost can't believe it, that things were that different that recently. Just in terms of how much society has changed, how much people, the level of trust in society has changed, the level of common agreement on things is so much lower now than it was at one time. And so we were kicking this idea around, and someone came up with the idea of we could, and people were telling kind of stories about growing up. And someone came up with the idea of, hey, let's collect all these stories into a book. And so there was an invitation for anyone who wanted to, who was in the right age range, to write a story of a few thousand words about growing up in Generation X. And so I've been trying to think of a story to write, and I haven't been able to come up with anything yet. Kind of stuck on that. I'm kind of notorious for not having a good memory for that kind of thing. I tend to remember flashes of stuff more so than one event in detail, unless it's something that really stuck with me. But so I haven't come up with a story yet, but a lot of those flashes have been coming to mind, and I thought, well, if I just maybe run through several of those, maybe that'll inspire a story, or maybe I can come up with something out of that to write. So, like I said, the idea is, you know, coming up with things about growing up in that generation that would be surprising to people now or different. And my own perspective is not only Generation X, but also being in living in a rural area, you know, living in the country, growing up on a farm. And that affects it too, that it's not just a question of when, but also where. Because I think, especially before the internet, now that may have changed it some, but I think before the internet, social change didn't make it out of the cities, out to the country as fast as, you know, or it took some time for it to work its way out there. And so some of the things I remember from the 70s and 80s are a lot like, say, you know, what you saw on the Andy Griffith Show from the 50s, as far as just, you know, people leaving their houses unlocked and things like that, that probably weren't that way by the 80s in if you lived in a city, but they still were in the small towns and out in the country. And in some cases, they still are now. So that's kind of my perspective, is, you know, Generation X on the farm, which is probably a little different than some people's. The one thing that comes up a lot in stories is how much less concern there was for safety back then. You know, a lot of kids in the 80s were latchkey kids. You know, they had to come home and have a key and let themselves in and be alone for a couple hours before the parents got there. And before one of the parents got home, once more mom started going to work, there were latchkey kids for a while before daycares kind of sprung up everywhere. And, you know, so that was kind of the phrase then, was latchkey kid. Well, the phrase now is helicopter parent. So it's gone completely the other way, to where you have parents who are always watching their kids, always on top of them. And, excuse me, you know, I think back to some of the stuff we did then. We had a kind of a drainage ditch, that's really what it was, a drainage ditch, just a large one behind our house that was, I don't know, maybe 100 feet across and 3 or 4 feet deep. It wasn't real deep, but it was deep enough that a kid could drown in it. And we were in that thing all the time. And there was broken glass and junk and everything, because that's another topic, is there was a lot more junk thrown out of cars and stuff back then. And we were back there we built rafts and floated around out there and would push them around sometimes, because sometimes you couldn't fit everybody on the raft, or the raft wouldn't hold everybody, so somebody'd push, somebody else would ride, that kind of stuff. We climbed around in the barns and jumped out onto things, and we would go out into the machine shed, and some of the farm equipment folds up so that you can take it down the highway. And so if you have like a disc that's 20 feet wide, you fold it up, and then there's a wheel out on either end, and those wheels then end up straight up at the top of the folded up parts. And maybe I should have used a picture of that for my video, but so then the wheels are horizontal up on top of this thing that's all steel and sharp edges and stuff. And we would climb up that and sit in those wheels, because then you could spin around and around in that wheel. So that was dangerous. I used to mess with electrical stuff. I used to take apart electrical things, radios and stuff like that, and shocked myself more than once, just figuring out how things work, and like, oh, don't touch that. So there was a lot less just concern for safety, a lot less just always watching your kids, and just kind of letting, you know, I wouldn't say neglecting, but just, you know, letting them kind of find their own, you know, find their own limits on things, compared to how there is now. And as far as safety goes, you know, I think back to, of course, people generally didn't wear seat belts. There were no car seats. There were no airbags. And there was no 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. Until some point, I don't know just when they added that, but I remember before it, because a lot of the roads around here were 70-mile-an-hour speed limit before they added that. And I remember tearing down some of those roads. This was before I was driving, but I remember just, you know, riding. You'd go over the hills and you'd get butterflies in your stomach every time, you know, going that fast. And usually we would just be bouncing around in the back in the station wagon. And a lot of times we rode in the back of pickups. You know, you just climb in the back of a pickup. And I don't think we ever went down the highway 70 miles an hour in a pickup. But if you just had to go down the gravel road a few miles, you know, 30, 40 miles an hour, yeah, you just, everybody jump in the back of the pickup and go. So, stuff like that that you wouldn't do today, or if you did, you'd get in trouble for it. But it was just normal then. We went a few years without a TV. I don't suppose that was normal, but, and we did eventually get one again. But when we did, there were only two channels here. To CBS and NBC. There was no ABC channel around. So we didn't watch much TV. We weren't allowed to watch some of the stuff that was on. And in the afternoons, after school, we watched stuff like I said, the Andy Griffith Show. I remember watching Bewitched a lot. Brady Bunch. I mean, pretty wholesome stuff by today's standards. And the networks were pretty particular then about, you know, what was on at what time. It seems like they've pretty much dropped all that now, but it wasn't, it doesn't seem like it was near the influence then. Although I suppose, you know, people did watch a lot of TV, and they did pretty much have to get their news from that, which that's one advantage now, is you don't have to rely on TV for your news. They pretty much were able to manipulate the news however they wanted then, because that was about your only choice. But it seems like we worked a lot as kids, more so than you see kids do now. I suppose that's partly because of the increased regulations now on that sort of thing. But we used to work for money. I think we knew what an allowance was. I think we'd heard of it, but we thought it was something that only richy rich kids got. And we didn't really understand why anybody would get an allowance. You know, why would anybody just give you money for just being there? So we worked. I remember one time we picked up corn. There had been a bad storm that knocked a lot of the corn down in the field out in front of the house. And so when they shelled the corn, they missed a lot of it because it was laying down on the ground. And so we went out there and picked up ears. And I think corn was about $3 a bushel at that time, which I'm not sure what it is right now, but it's probably not very much higher than that. That was kind of before the farm prices leveled off for 40 years. So we went out and picked up corn, and we all got paid for whatever we picked up. And we also, and then my mom and dad took the rest of the money from that and bought a pool table. And that's something that was a lot different then too, was people saved up money for things a lot more so than now. Really, I don't know how many people had credit cards back then. I think store cards were fairly common, where you might have a card at Sears or JCPenney's or somewhere like that, where it was basically store credit. You could buy something on credit and pay for it over a few months. But I don't think credit cards for just everyday consumer debt were that common. So if you wanted a luxury item like a pool table, you saved up for it. But other things we did for work, we baled hay. That was probably the biggest money maker, was baling hay in the summertime. One summer we put up 10,000 bales of hay and straw, and we got 5 cents a piece. We got 5 cents per bale, so that worked out to $500 for each of us for a summer's work, which was a lot of money in the mid-80s. We did other, driving a tractor in the field. What else? Well, and we all raised livestock at some point. And that, that's one thing that would have been different for farm kids as compared to town kids, is, we had a chance to raise animals. So I had hogs starting, I don't know, maybe about age 12 or something like that. I started raising hogs, started with two of them, and gradually worked up to where I think I had 23 or 24 sows at towards the end of high school, and made money that way. Made money selling the feeder pigs. So that was another thing we were able to do. And we didn't have a lot to spend our money on, because out on the farm you didn't, you weren't running down to the malt shop or anything, so the money pretty much went into savings. But it was there when we got out of school and wanted to go off to college or to buy a car or whatever. It was there then. Let's see. Oh, savings. That just reminded me of something that I said before. People saved up a lot more for things. Of course, one reason for that was there was actually a decent interest rate worth saving. When I got my first savings account, after selling my first hogs, I think the interest rate was 5%, which, is actually pretty decent. You could actually accumulate a little money keeping your money in the bank at that rate. But that was before there became such an emphasis on debt and on constantly borrowing to get the next, the next big thing. And to kind of keep the economy pumped up, they started pushing the interest rate down to keep people borrowing, keep everyone borrowing for a new house or borrowing to start businesses, that kind of thing. So they kind of skewed the whole relationship between savers and borrowers to where, the interest rate had been kind of in the middle, to where people saving money gained a little and people borrowing could also gain something. And then it kind of went to all for the borrowers, and there wasn't really any reason to save anymore, because they really didn't, for one thing, they don't use the savings to secure the borrowing anymore. The borrowing just creates money on its own. So there's not that relationship there that there used to be. One big difference we talked about on the blog is food. That, for one thing, people used to sit down at the table for dinner with the whole family. You'd sit down and pray and eat. That was just the way it was done. Not so much for breakfast, because people had to leave at different times, and at lunch, it just whoever was there would sit down and eat at the table. But you ate together, and food was pretty much all home cooked. I think, they had started, there were certainly kind of microwaves by then, but not that many people had them, and they weren't very good, and they still aren't very good, as far as you can't really cook with them the way, I think at that time people kind of thought, well, someday, there's this Jetsons future coming where you'll pop something in the microwave and, pop a turkey in the microwave and, be eating it 20 minutes later. All that, none of that ever happened. So they're still pretty much for heating things up. But, you know, food was home cooked pretty much. And one thing, I started low carbon again back at the first of the year. And one thing that comes up sometimes in low carb conversations is, well, you know, when we were growing up, we ate a lot of carbs. And that's true in a way, because we did eat a lot of macaroni, and we ate a lot of potatoes because we grew potatoes. We ate a lot of sweet corn because we grew the sweet corn. And, you know, we ate a lot of bread and macaroni and spaghetti and stuff like that. But I think when you compare that to today's carbs, today's are more processed. There's more of the high fructose corn syrup and stuff. I don't know if there was any of it in things back then. And we didn't get soda all the time like people do now. We get soda on like special occasions, like birthdays and stuff. So you could say, well, and we also ate quite a few desserts, you know, cakes and cookies and stuff like that. So you could say, well, you know, we did eat too many carbs then, and we also did eventually gain weight, all of us. But at the same time, it wasn't what it is now. It wasn't with the constant liquid carbs and soda and just the concentrated sugars and everything and corn syrup and everything and soybean oil and everything. And it's just, it's a lot more concentrated now. So I think that's, you know, when you look around and you see that, yeah, people are, you know, obesity and other health problems have increased since the 70s and 80s, you have to look at more than just the, you know, just the amount of starch that was on the plate and look a little deeper into what's actually in things. One thing that it comes to mind sometimes is health, because of course that's, you know, that's a big cost nowadays for people is healthcare. And, you know, politicians panic people by saying, you know, your healthcare is going to go away, or, you know, you're not going to be able to afford it. And I think back to, you know, when we were kids, you just didn't go to the hospital unless you absolutely had to. I'm not sure. I think I might have gone to the hospital once that wasn't like an appointment for, you know, for a checkup. You know, like to get vaccinated for school or something when you absolutely had to. But, you know, if you had the flu, you were throwing up, something like that, you had, you know, white soda and crackers. If, you know, if you had an earache, you got out the hot water bottle and used on it. If you had the chicken pox, you stayed home until, you know, you stayed home for 2 weeks until they subsided, and then, you know, and then you went back to school. You know, all those things that everybody either just kind of, you know, had the knowledge passed down, or they had a Dr. Spock book or whatever. All those things you just took care at home, just took care of at home. And it, you know, now that, because for one thing, nobody had health coverage. Some people had medical insurance where if you had some catastrophe, you could go, and it was more like car insurance where you had a high deductible, and, you know, it would basically cover you if some catastrophe happened, but you weren't going to run to the hospital every time you had the flu. And so once health coverage started and it got to where you could pay your $10 or $20 copay and go in, and that was all you were going to pay, well then, sure, why not? You know, why not run in as soon as a kid has a fever or something? You know, why take a chance? And of course, you know, then that drove up the prices of things, because then there was a lot more demand. So that's one thing that really feels different is when I see, you know, somebody that, you know, kid's got a fever, oh, let's run into the clinic, or, you know, and I think, well, it never would have even occurred to us to do that. It just wasn't something you did. One thing that comes up a lot talking about this stuff is that a lot of knowledge, just basic everyday knowledge, was lost. Kind of when the boomers didn't want to pass it down, I guess because it wasn't cool, it wasn't new. And so you got the you got a generation in of a couple generations, really, Generation X and the Millennials, that weren't taught things like basic cooking skills and cleaning skills and how to change your oil and how to shoot and stuff like that. It just, a lot of that basic stuff that people used to always pass down to their kids or their nieces and nephews and so on didn't get passed down. And so now there's almost a, there's a whole kind of learn-it-yourself industry building up around that kind of stuff, where younger people who want to know how to do that, they don't have, they can't go to their parents and ask them because they didn't learn it. And so they're having to learn it online through videos or go take a class or something like that, which is a lot harder than learning something just by learning it as you grow up. You know, my mom taught us all to cook, you know, boys and girls alike, taught us all basic sewing too, you know, boys and girls alike. And I don't know, you know, basically by the time we were old enough to see over the counters, we were starting to cook things and help with things. And, you know, once you could get up on a chair and help measure, you know, ingredients for a cake or something, that you were doing it. And it was interesting, and you learned that way. And, you know, once we were able to cook our own stuff, then she could say, you know, hey, you want, you know, you don't want what everybody else is eating for breakfast, or, you know, I'm making this for breakfast. If you want something else, you know how to make it, you know. Or if you said, hey, I want brownies, you know, let's have brownies. She'd say, well, you know where the recipe book is. And, you know, we didn't have a real big family. There were only four of us kids, but I'm sure that was still helpful to be able to say, well, you know how to do that yourself. So why don't you whip together a batch of brownies? And the nice thing about if you make them yourself is you get first dibs on them. So you don't have to worry that if somebody else is making them, they might all be gone by the time you get in the house. One thing I remember from school was there was this lady who used to come in. She and her husband, I believe, I think the two of them would travel together. They were older, retired, I assume. And they would travel to foreign lands like China or Turkey or somewhere like that. And they'd come back, and she would come to school then. They'd have an assembly, and she would do a slideshow and tell us about stuff that they saw. And it was always pretty interesting. And I think back to that sometimes. I think, you know, those places, when she would tell us about those places, they would seem really foreign. And that's not meant in a bad way. It's just, you know, foreign places are foreign. They're different, you know. It was clear that people in other places did things differently than we did, and that made them interesting. It made you want to learn more about them, and it also made you appreciate your own culture more, because, you know, knowing that there were other places that didn't do things the way we do, you know, it made you appreciate the way we do things. And I think that's kind of been lost. There's been such a push politically in the last couple decades to claim that people around the world are all basically the same. And they might look different, they might talk funny, but everybody's basically the same. Everybody wants democracy, everybody wants peace, and means the same thing by it. You know, everybody wants blue jeans, you know, basically everybody wants the same life, the same way of life. And that's not true, first of all, but it kind of takes the interest out of things, that all these foreign places are just kind of carbon copies of us, or they would be carbon copies of us if they had a little more money, or they had a little more, you know, a little more time to develop or something like that, which is kind of the attitude that's been pushed ever since, you know, really ever since the Bush administration. And I think that kind of took something away. It took away an appreciation for, hey, these places are foreign and different, but that's not a bad thing. We didn't back then, we didn't have to believe they were like us, you know, that they were just like us in different outfits to be able to appreciate them. We could appreciate them as different and at the same time appreciate what we had. And I think in the push for globalism and exporting democracy and all that stuff, that's kind of been lost, that appreciation for, you know, things can be foreign and still have a value and still be interesting. Let's see. I think that's all the things I had down on my list. I thought maybe some other things would pop to mind, but not too many have. I do remember gifts have changed a bit. You didn't get as many gifts back then. You didn't get gifts on Easter. That's one thing. People give Easter gifts now, and I think, when did that start? Because we didn't get gifts, but I don't think anybody else did either. I don't remember kids coming to school with new toys or new clothes or anything after Easter. You got a basket. It had Easter eggs in it, and it had candy in it, and that's how it was, and that was good. Just to go back to the original topic a little bit, we were just kind of talking about how there's been this decline, and it's been a long time coming. It wasn't like the changes in the 60s immediately took effect. It took a long time to kind of wear at the social fabric. And so, you know, in the 70s, it was kind of a time of shortages and people feeling like things were going the wrong direction. And then in the 80s, there was a little bit of a bounce back from that, more optimism. But also, that's kind of when people really plunged into debt. And, you know, like I said, there's kind of all these changes that we lived through. And I don't remember what I was going to say about that, but that's kind of the idea with trying to gather these stories, is to show that, you know, things haven't always been like they are. They don't have to be like they are. You know, there was a time, and it wasn't, you don't have to go all the way back to Mayberry in the 1950s, even just back to the 80s or the 70s. There was a time when there was a lot more just social cohesion, a lot more of just kind of a general agreement between people as to what was right and wrong, what America was about. You know, just the fact that you could let your kids run out and play. We used to, you know, like I said, we weren't in town, so we couldn't run around town, which is the story a lot of people have, but we would run down a quarter mile to the end of our place, to where there was a good fish spot where you could fish off the road. You know, we were out of sight of everybody, but there was a lot more social trust. That's the term I'm looking for. It wasn't that everybody got along and everybody agreed, and it wasn't that people thought there were no bad guys out there, but there was just a lot more general social trust that everybody was basically on the same page. Nobody was trying to, you know, destroy the country, and, you know, people had different opinions on how to make things go forward, but, you know, you understood that everybody was at least trying to move things forward, even if some of the ideas of how to do that might not have been so good. But there was just kind of a sense that, or more of a sense at least, that people were on the same page about the basic things that are important. You know, that everybody agreed that, you know, you stood up and saluted the flag when it went by in a parade. You know, there wasn't the issue of millions of people in the country who, you know, fly another nation's flag, you know, and, you know, go to soccer matches and, you know, scream against the country they're living in, you know, stuff like that. There was just a lot more of everybody being, everybody feeling like we were kind of all in this together and not different groups, not different groups working against each other and each trying to get the biggest piece of the pie. I'm sure there was some of that going on. I mean, there was politics and muckraking and all that kind of stuff going back, till the beginning. But when I was growing up, I think it wasn't as bad as it is now, and there was just more of a sense that there wasn't that much division. The divisions were more about how to do things and not basic ideas about what would even be right to do in the first place, or what right and wrong are. It was more just how to get to it. So there's been a lot of breaking down of that, and I might talk more about that. I don't think I'm going to get into that in this podcast because I'm already going pretty long, but that'll be a topic for another time. But I think that's one reason we wanted to do this was, to kind of show younger people that, if it seems like the country is falling apart, if it seems like people can't get along and things are just kind of going to heck, well, it doesn't have to be that way. It wasn't always that way. So, there are people who know how to do it a better way. There are people who have better answers than that. So, don't despair, I guess, is the message that we're that's kind of underlying this. So, I guess that's going to be the podcast for tonight. And hopefully I'll be back with another one soon, either a podcast or I may be back with a video. Now that I've got this studio program going, maybe I'll try one of my tutorial videos and put that up next. One way or another, I'll be back with something. So thanks for listening. Good night.